Hey there, welcome to this week's message from Real Life Ministries. We are so glad that you're here. We hope that this message will encourage and inspire you to walk closer with Jesus. Now sit back, relax, and let's dive into the Word together.
How we doing? Hey, welcome. Good to see you guys, everybody in the house. Good to see everybody who's in your own house as well, or wherever you're watching. Hopefully you're not watching online, on the road, or driving anywhere. Although I think I can drive and do multiple things, you should not be. So thanks for joining us online or on the app. And again, welcome you guys. Good to see you today. We're going to dive right in. We have so many good things to talk about. Yes. So we got to go. I hope you're ready. If not, get ready now. Okay, good. Now I have your attention. Because some of this conversation for this week is to continue on the conversation, the journey about experiencing God. Part of experiencing God is knowing who he is and his ways and not our own. So sometimes we need to do our part because we know that God's faithful to do his. So we're going to dive right in, you guys. This is week 5. Again, we're on an Experiencing God series. If you've missed it, go back. You can see it right on the app or online. You can see those each and every week. We also have a YouTube page, Real Life Ministries Coeur d'Alene. And you can even check some stuff out on Facebook if people are still using Facebook. Anybody still using Facebook? Yeah, you know who you are. You need to get off Facebook. Well, you need to be on Facebook. If you're watching on Facebook, stay there. If you're in the house, get off Facebook. See, it's not always one or the other. Sometimes it's either or, okay? That'll preach. But not the message for this week, okay? Week 5, here we go. We are talking again in Experiencing God. We're talking about a very specific point in the journey this week. Could be my most favorite because it's my least favorite point. It's talking about crisis of belief. I'm talking about a crisis of belief in our lives and in the process of experiencing God. So as a recap, we've talked about the realities. This is the fifth reality of experiencing God. If you have the workbook and you're going along, you'll know this. If you've been watching, you've heard it. The first is that God is always at work. God is always at work. Jesus says the Father is always at work and I am too. God is always at work. That's the first reality. Whether we see it, whether we feel it, whether we know it, whether we like it, God is always working. That's the first reality. The second reality is that God is constantly pursuing you with an intentional relationship because he wants to love you and he does love you and he wants to show you that he loves you. God's constantly pursuing every single one of us in relationship so that we can experience him. In God's relationship with us, as he's pursuing us, he invites us to be involved in his work. He invites us to be involved in his work, not the opposite, which would be, I like to try to invite God into my work. Try to invite God into my life, my way, my season, my plan. God is constantly inviting us into his plan. As God invites us into his plan, we get to experience him, but God then speaks to us. Christian talked about this last week, did a great job. Yes, God has clearly spoken already. How? In his word. We have the Bible, we've talked about that. But God speaks to us through the Bible by the leading of his spirit. He speaks to us through our circumstances and through the church or other people. That's how he reveals his will, his specific plan and way for us. God speaks as we follow. That's important, which brings us to this week. The crisis of belief as we do or as we don't accept and follow God in his invitation. So before we dive into that, there's a couple things to remember to help us understand his invitation and this crisis of belief that we enter into. Again, God's always working. He's always pursuing. He's always inviting. He's always chasing. He's always, always, always doing those things. And it's super important to remember that that's true and ask ourselves, do we see it? And so I'm a person that needs to learn by example and by going through things. I think God designed us that way. He definitely did me, maybe you too. And so I think of the interaction with my son that happens often to help me understand this part. So my son is 7 now, his name's Hudson. He's gonna be used a lot in this message because he is. And so one of the ways that me and my son interact, he's always inviting me to do things with him. Always wants me to spend time with him. Always wants me to whatever it is, doesn't matter. And so in so many different ways, he tries to get my attention. Sometimes he'll just come up and ask me, hey dad, right? And a lot of times it's when I don't want to, when I'm busy, or I'm doing something, or I'm in my own life doing my own thing, he wants to invite me into doing something with him. So he'll ask me, if that doesn't work, he'll be anywhere in the house doing anything at a time, and then he'll just start yelling. Dad! Dada! Daddy! Dad! Dad! And of course, I'm like, well, that's completely unacceptable childlike behavior. So I shall not respond to his yelling from in a different room. So continue ignoring. So he loves Nerf guns. Who loves Nerf guns? Yes, ladies, let me see your hands. Yeah, don't lie. Come on, right? Yep, I know it. Some of you right now playing with it, okay? So he'll set up across the room, and he's like, Dad won't listen. Don't listen to me yelling. I'm going to shoot him right in the forehead. He was a good shot, too. I should probably learn from him. So he'll shoot darts. Bam, bam, bam. Knock it off. What are you doing? Continue ignoring, right? Yell doesn't work. Shoot darts doesn't work. And then his most recent tactic, which he's actually really good at, is he will literally just come and, like, lay on me. Just lay on me right here. Right here. And I think literally yesterday I was like, Hudson, I think you are breathing the air out of my mouth. Why? I was like, stop it. Get off me. Right? Pursues, pursues, pursues. And I'm like, buddy, why are you doing these things? Can you not see that you're interrupting what I currently have going on? If you wanted to talk to me, why wouldn't you just come and ask me? Here's the problem. He already had. I just wasn't paying attention. Wasn't listening. Wasn't looking for it. Because I was stuck doing what? My own thing. That's right. My own thing. So when God pursues, when he asks us, when we come to this position where we're understanding his invitation and that he's working, sometimes we don't see it because we're seeing only what we want to see. We're doing our own thing. And when it leads to this crisis of belief, sometimes we misunderstand the process that gets us to the point where we get to choose to trust, to interact, to have faith. And that's what causes us to have this crisis, to not understand. So God's constantly pursuing. Sometimes we don't see it because we're not looking for it. But here's what's great, and here's what's important to recognize as we look into this for tonight. With God, when we do see it, right? Whether it's yelling or quiet, whether he's forced it or has been patient with us, no matter how, when we do see it, here's what we actually see, which is the point of this entire series, is that when we see God's invitation in his work and he's been pursuing us in relationship, his grace and his mercy and his love, we see that he's been working and orchestrating all along, that he's always been behind the scenes, that he's always putting things in place so that we actually get the opportunity to recognize the invitation for us to step into what God has always had and hoped and wanted for us. That we recognize that he's been inviting us into something that he has actually created you for in your life before time began. We see that that's what he's been doing all along. But until we see it, we don't see it. This conversation for today is, will you see God's invitation? And when you do, it will be a crisis for you to choose to believe what I just said. That God is actually for you, that he's actually been working, and that he's actually inviting you into something that he has pre-planned that has been the best thing for you all along. That should cause something in you. And the topic of this conversation is that that should be a crisis to where you have to make a decision to choose to believe God or not. It's called the crisis of belief. Ephesians 2, 8 and 10 specifically talks about this. And he says, "For it's by grace you have been saved through faith. This is not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by anything that you do or have done so that you can't boast." In verse 10, he says this, Paul clearly tells us, "For we are God's handiwork or masterpiece, craftsmanship." And he says, "Created in Christ Jesus to do what? Good works." When did he plan it? "Which God prepared in advance, before time began, for you to do." Man, that sounds like life, doesn't it? If that's true, here's my question. If that's true, then why along the journey of experiencing God is there this point in the journey to where there's a crisis of actually choosing to believe? Because if what Ephesians says, if what Paul says is true, we should be like, me, 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 me. I want to go, God, what do you have? It's best for me. They're good works. You've planned them for me. At any time I see that, I'm in. That's like lottery winner, right? I get to do the good thing that God has planned and designed me to be a part of for my life. Who doesn't want to do that? Well, why is it hard then? Why is it difficult? How come we're not doing that all the time, every day, perfectly all the time? Well, because there's parts of it that are important to understand. One of those parts is the crisis of belief. Why do we have a crisis of belief? Because the good works that God calls us into, you can't do by yourself. Let me say that again. The good works that God has planned for you to do ahead of time. Whose will? His. You cannot do apart from him. That causes a crisis of belief. Can I actually do it? Will he actually be there? Is this actually good? I know that he's calling me. I know that he says it. I know that it's there. I can actually see it. I can recognize it. And there it is. It's right on the doorstep. But it's a crisis of belief. Because you can't do it without him. John 15, 5 says, Jesus tells us, I'm the vine, you're the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. When you see a task ahead of you that you try to do on your own, Jesus says that you can do none of it. Is that exciting? Like, I want to go do that? Or is that like, ooh, how's this going to work? How am I going to do this? How can I do that? Crisis of belief. Furthermore, in Ephesians 3:20, Paul again tells us, now to him is to be able to do immeasurably more than all we can ever ask or imagine according to his power that is in us. How much can God do in us? Immeasurably more than you can ever ask, hope, or imagine. And it's according to whose power? God's. So when we live our lives and we're seeking God and we want to experience him and we go, God, what's your will and who am I and why have you created me and what's next for me? And God, how do I follow you in that? God is going to present things to you to where those truths are going to be tested. It's God in us. He can do more than we can ever ask or imagine. But if you step up to the plate and you're like, I got this. This is all me. No worries, super easy. Whose will is it? It's a good question. It's a good question. So reality 5, right? When God asks you to do something you can't do on your own, you face a crisis of belief. God's invitation for you to work with him will always result in a crisis of belief that requires faith and action. So I want to talk about the definition of crisis here for a second, because crisis is one of those words that seems offensive. And it may be, and that's okay, and it's used on purpose. But here's the definition of the word crisis. It's a noun that means this: a crucial stage or turning point in a course of a process, especially in a sequence of events. I'll read that again. It's a crucial stage or turning point in the course of a process, especially in a sequence of events. The Latin word actually means decision. The Greek word meaning crisis comes from krenion, the noun or the verb, is to decide. So crisis, if you change the word to decision and you swap it with this reality, instead of it being crisis of belief, the word is actually making a decision out of your belief. If you expand it a little bit more, here's what crisis of belief is in this process. Would be a crucial turning point of a decision based on what you believe. Dang. Coming to a crisis of belief in your experience with God and your walk and your journey is any point to where you find yourself at a turning point. That crucial Y in the road to where you get to make a decision based on what you actually believe. And God says that when you choose him, you experience him. God says when you choose you, you won't. So the crisis of belief is a decision. It's the why in the road based on what you actually have faith in and believe. When our experience with God brings us to this crisis of belief, we get to the point where we get to decide that we're going to choose and trust God or ourselves. So here's the rest of the conversation for today. We're going to talk about 3 truths that are super important to understand about God's invitation in this crisis of belief. So that, here's my hope. We're gonna talk about these 3 truths, but here's my hope with it. That you'd walk away with a couple things. Number 1, that you'd be able to recognize when these circumstances happen in your life, that you'd be able to recognize when you are in that moment, that why in the road, that crisis of belief, so that you know that when you're there, this is one of those opportunities where I get to decide. The first step is to recognize when those moments arise. Would you agree? Because if we don't see it, we don't see it. We go, where, God, where are you? I want to experience you. We will go, oh, this is one of those moments. This is one of those circumstances. This is one of those seasons. This is one of those relationships, those conversations, those opportunities. This one right here, that's that crisis of belief. My first hope is that you would learn to see it first. Here's the second. That in that crisis of belief, when you recognize it's time to make that decision based on who you are and what you think is true, that you'd be able to look into this crisis and recognize why and how you don't have the faith to trust God. I'll say it again. The second hope is that you'd be able to look into these circumstances when you see it and when you're there and to be able to identify what's going on inside of me, what's happening, what do I believe that's gonna show me that lack of faith and trust, that crisis of belief moment to where I choose me, not God. That's my hope. So here's our three truths to help us get there. First one is that God calls us into good works. We just talked about that. The second one is that the opportunity to join God in that work is always going to result in what? That crisis of belief. He calls us into it. The second one is that it's always going to cause us to have this crisis of belief. And the third one is this, we only experience God to the degree that he wants us to when we trust and obey. And that faith and that trust is always real and authentic when it leads to action, when it leads to us doing something about it. So we're gonna dive in, we're gonna break these down. First one, truth is that God calls us into good works. And here's what God's good works look like. They look like God. God's good works are God-sized, God-shaped, and require you to be God-reliant. God-sized, God-shaped require you to be God-reliant. You wanna see what God's will is? You wanna see the good works that he's presented before you? They're gonna look like God. They're gonna require you to have enough faith and trust to be able to do what God has called you to do in these circumstances that looks like God, like what Jesus went into, how he was when he did it, what he said, how he acted, what he did do, what he didn't do. Looks like Jesus, looks like God. Those are God's invitations. A little bit more specifically, they look like God. God's good works looks like God's good love, his good spirit, his good service, and his good sacrifice. Guess where all those come from? His good word that he's already shared, that he's already spoken, that we can read and look and process and put into practice and be in relationship with people. We can recognize it in our lives because we can recognize it from the word. God's good love, 1 Corinthians 13, it's patient, it's kind, it doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it's not proud. It doesn't dishonor others. It's not self-seeking. It doesn't easily get mad. Keeps no record of wrongs. Doesn't delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. It protects, it trusts, it hopes, it perseveres, it fails. When you have a circumstance in your life that God is inviting you into to where that is the requirement in the situation, that's God's invitation to a God-sized, God-reliant opportunity. When you go, I gotta forgive. This is gonna require me to be patient and not keep a record of wrongs. I gotta be kind. Gosh, I don't know. Crisis of belief. Where I gotta trust to choose. I gotta hope. Crisis of belief. It's a God opportunity. Looks like God's love. Looks like God's fruit. Right? God's fruit from Galatians is what? Loving, patient, kind. It's forbearing. Right? It suffers. All of those parts, right, of the fruit of the spirit of kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. In that relationship with that coworker, with that family member, with your children, with your parents, with whatever opportunity and circumstance that you're in, where God is calling you into in a situation to where who gets to be that? We do. In our own strength? No. With God in us. A God-reliant opportunity to put into practice the fruit of the Spirit is an invitation for God for you to join him in what he's doing. And when you see those words and you recognize those circumstances, that should cause you to go, oh, I don't think I can do this right now. I don't think I can be that way, God. In fact, if it's up to me, I can't, which is what we already talked about. Because apart from Jesus, apart from being God-reliant in a God-recognized situation, what can you do? Nothing. Crisis of belief. God, this is going to require me to be what you call me to be. God, this is going to require me to trust you to do that in me. Crisis of belief. Or a determining decision based on what you believe is where God places us. Looks like his love. It looks like his fruit, right? It also looks like his sacrifice. Jesus said that the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. Any circumstance where you choose to put others ahead of yourself, or you choose to serve someone because you love them and you care about them because of what Jesus did for you, that's a God opportunity, right? And lastly, God's sacrifice. The Son of Man choose to lay his life down for us, choose to give us life and salvation. Anytime you choose to lay your life down for somebody else with your own will, your own way, your own wants, when you put that down, that is an opportunity that God is giving you to join him in his will and his work. The first truth is that God invites us into God-sized opportunities. When we recognize the invitation into God's good works, you should have a crisis of belief. If you don't, then whose will is it? I know for me, when I choose me, there's no crisis of choosing me unless it's in opposition to choosing God. It's easy for me to choose me. I'm like, yep, good decision. I benefit. Me, my way, my stuff. Not much crisis there. Unless you're like me, when I choose me and I go, ooh, choosing me means I'm completely choosing not God or anybody else, then I should have something going on. But a crisis of belief, that decision that's a life alterer, the why in the road, when you have those circumstances and you know that God is doing something, you should feel that tension. And you should recognize that as God is calling you into something. That's the first truth. Truth number two is that the opportunity to join God always leads to what? The crisis of belief. It always does. Let me ask you this question before we dive into this one. If you're not experiencing a crisis of belief, then what more than likely is not happening? You're not seeing the invitation. You're not joining God where he is. You're not experiencing what he has to experience, because God wants to invite you into something where you are changed. You do have to trust him. You do have to rely on him. His will be done in the face of what's happening in the world. So if you're not seeing that, not feeling that, not experiencing that, you're probably on the bench and not in the game. It will always lead you into experiencing a crisis of belief to trust God. I want to talk about the example of Moses. If you're using the going along in a small group, men's group, women's group, and you're using the study that we've gone through, you'll see that this story is in there from Exodus. I'll use the story of Moses to help us understand a little bit more of the detail of the crisis of belief. This part's super good. Really painful, but really good. So hang in there. Crisis of belief. You're like, I don't want to listen to this right now. I don't know if I want to do this, God. Right where you need to be. Right where you need to be, okay? We're going to use the story of Moses. We're going to use the story of Moses to look at three common ways that we actually feel and experience and come to these crossroads in this crisis of belief. Three common ways. Here's what I want you to do as we go through this. Number one, I want you to be honest with yourself. If you actually feel and experience these, go, yeah, that's me. Okay, be listening for that as we look at it. Number two, if you're going to say, hey, if I relate to this, I also want you to see what's true, even though you feel this way. I also want you to see what's true to help you make a different decision with each one of these, okay? Who's ready? Me, okay. Here we go. Story of Moses, right? We see that Moses, this is a quick summary of Exodus. If this doesn't make sense or you think it's off, go back and read it and then let me know if it's wrong and we'll get there together. Moses, right? God appears to Moses in a form of a burning bush, right? And Moses actually goes to see this burning bush. He's very intrigued. He goes over there and God actually starts to speak to him through this burning bush. And through this interaction, basically, God goes to Moses and he says, I'm going to use you, Moses, to be my mouthpiece, to speak on my behalf, to help all of my people, Israel, who is in slavery under Pharaoh, receive freedom. God goes to Moses and he says, this is what I'm asking you to do. This is who I want to use. And Moses right away says, who am I? Who am I? God, that you would choose me. And God says, you are who you are. I made you. And I'm choosing you, Moses. And so he says, I'll be with you. This is what God says to Moses. Moses, who am I? God says, I know who you are. I made you. I will be with you, Moses, in this process. So Moses turns back. He says, okay, what if they don't believe me? You're going to use me. You say that I'm going to go talk to Pharaoh. What if they don't believe what I say? And God says, again, I'll be with you. But this time he says, I'll show you. And he has him take a staff and he throws it on the ground, turns into a snake. Right? He says, they don't believe that. Right? Put your hand into your cloak and you pull it out and it's leprous. Put it back in and then it's clean. And they don't believe that. Go take some water from the Nile, pour it on the ground, it'll turn into blood. And he shows them a multitude of different examples to say, I will be with you. I've promised that I will be with you. I'm going to show you that that's how it's going to go. Moses says, okay, but I don't speak very well. I don't speak very well. And God says, who created speaking? I did. I'll be with you. I've shown you. I'll show you what to say. Moses says, I don't really see how this is going to work. No. Send somebody else. God got angry. He said, okay, I'm going to send Moses with you. I'm going to send Aaron. And Aaron's going to be like your mouthpiece. I'm going to speak to you. You're going to speak to him. He's going to speak to Pharaoh as though I was speaking to them. And my people are going to be set free. Moses agrees. And God goes, by the way, please take the staff that I showed you to do miracles just in case. Which is kind of a funny part of the story because God always has a just in case. So here's the story of Moses as an example for us to find three common ways in which we also experience a crisis of belief. Here's the first one I see in the story. God comes to Moses and says, I want to use you. And he says, who am I? The first crisis of belief that Moses exhibits is fear and doubt. Fear and doubt. God says, Moses, I want to use you. And he goes, you don't even know who I am, God. Don't you know what I've done? Moses killed an Egyptian. Now he's going to send him to them. Don't you know who I am, God? Who am I that you're going to choose me? I'm not qualified for this. I'm not capable to do this. God, why would you pick me? Fear. Doubt. God had clearly spoken. God had clearly shown him. God had clearly said, I'll be with you. But yet Moses said, who am I? I can't even do this. I can't speak well, and you're going to use me to speak to Pharaoh who is enslaving all of your people? I can't do this. Fear and doubt because of who he was, because of what he had done. He didn't believe that God could use him to be a part of his will. Do you see that in the story? I know that's true in my story. I have a past. I have a history. I've made some terrible decisions growing up. I'm not perfect. I've made decisions that have hurt people. I've made decisions that have tried to ruin my marriage. And God has invited me into things. And guess what I've told God? God, you can't use me. Who am I? Don't you know what I've done? Don't you know the things I've said? Don't you know the doubts that I have? I'm too scared to do this. God, you can't use me. Crisis of belief. The why and the road, the opportunity to where God has invited you to do something of significance, of magnitude that requires God reliance. And what jumps in the way is, I can't. Can't do it. And left to your own device, you're right. But what's the thing to remember about what God's good invitation is that we have to rely on him. And here's the truth that gets in the way of this crisis, is that God promises to always be with us. In the story, God says, I know who you are, I made you. I know who I'm inviting into, I'm God. I know what's possible, that's why I'm choosing you. That's why he chooses us. He does know. He does have confidence when we don't. He does have the ability when we can't. He does know the past that we know. Fear and doubt
is the first way that we feel this crisis of belief when God invites us into what he's doing. Here's the reality and the truth for Moses, and that's true for us. Right? God, and Jesus says this in Mark, he says that with man, lots of stuff is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. Right? The truth and the fear is that you can't do it. You're not qualified, and you're not good enough, and your past is not good enough. God already knows that. And guess who he still chooses? You. The first crisis of belief is fear and doubt. Second one, I see in the story of Moses. God chooses Moses. I can't do it. Who am I, right? How's this gonna work? I don't speak very well. Moses starts to go, I don't really see how this is gonna work. It's confusion. The second common way is confusion or misunderstanding. Moses went before God and God had shown him, God had promised him, God had told him, and he said, I don't really see how this is gonna work, God, so I don't really think I'm gonna do it. Have you ever been in a spot in your life to where you're like, God, I wanna see the solution first. I wanna see step 1, 2 through 10. I wanna see the results. I want it guaranteed in writing and deposited into my bank account, and then I'll say yes. Guys, that's me. But Moses is like, I don't see how this is gonna work. I don't see how you're gonna use me. I don't see how they're gonna listen. I don't really even see how I'm gonna speak well. God, I don't know how this is gonna work, so I'm gonna say no. As a crisis of belief, to go, God, you're calling me into something that I don't understand, so I'm gonna say no. Moses exhibits confusion. I don't understand, how's this gonna work? I don't see how this is a good plan at all. You ever said that to God? You ever said, God, this is not a good plan. I don't like your plan. This is not gonna go well. This is not good, God. Therefore, I'm not gonna have to do it. I'm justified. What good can come from this situation? What good can come from your plan? Right? And I told you I was gonna share a couple examples. My son Hudson, right? This is a story from a couple years back. It's perfect, because I love it and I hate it. I said that twice. My son and I were driving to my parents' house. We went over there for dinner. And we're driving across by Silver Lake Mall on one of those roads. And it was right when they had just put Dickie's Barbecue, I think, right there in the parking lot. Is that right? That's the barbecue place. We're driving over there talking about what we're gonna have for dinner, right? Usually he likes mac and cheese or something. This is when he was like 4. And we're driving across town, and I noticed the barbecue place over there, right? And he's wondering, talking about dinner, and I was like, I wonder if it's gonna be barbecue like that place right there. And Hudson's like, what's barbecue? And I'm like, buddy, it's amazing. It's meat, it's cooked, it's awesome, it's beef, it's pork, it's chicken. He goes, what's pork? I was like, 4-year-old, right? I'm like, it's a pig. And he's like, what? I'm like, no, for real. Like, pork is amazing, dude. Like, it's good. You know what the best part of pork is? Bacon. Bacon. Oh my gosh, bacon. And he's in the back seat, right? And he's like, that, no way. Ugh. Pigs? Nasty, right? No way anything comes good that comes from a pig. He didn't know what he was talking about. He still don't know what he's talking about. If you don't like bacon, there's something wrong with you. Thank you. He didn't know how bacon could even be a good thing. He wasn't even willing to think about it. He wasn't even willing to entertain it. He wasn't even willing to try it. Why? Because it was from a pig. And he went, pig? Nothing good comes from a pig. Just like nothing good comes from Galilee. Just like nothing good comes from what God asks us to do when we can't see it and understand it. Just like that situation that you're in, you're like, God, there's no way this is gonna be good. God, there's no way you're working in this. God, I don't see how this is gonna be anything that's gonna help you or me or anybody else. God, there's nothing good that comes from this situation that I don't clearly understand all the details in order from. See, it's no different. The second crisis of belief that's common that we experience is that we go, God, when I don't see how it's gonna work and I don't think it can be good, I don't think I can trust you. I don't think I can follow you into that. I don't think I have enough faith that you're gonna work it out. I don't have enough faith that bacon can come from a pig. No way. And that's what we're like sometimes. Just like my son who didn't know was absolutely unwilling to give a try. And what did he miss out on? Ooh. He loves bacon now, right? He'd been educated. But how long did he miss out on the goodness of bacon because he didn't believe that it could come from a pig? Just because you can't see it and don't understand it does not mean that God's not in it. Crisis of belief. A life-changing, altering decision at the Y in the road because you can't see what God has for you, so you choose not to. Which leads to the last one. When Moses had been going on the journey of trusting God, when he doubted who he was, God says, I know who you are. When he doubted his ability, God says, I know your ability. I'll be with you. When he doubted how it was going to work, God said, it's okay, I'm going to work it out. I'm going to send Aaron. I'm going to do all this other stuff. Before that even happened, Moses came to the spot to where he heard the things, he saw the stuff, he watched the miracles, he understood his worth and value, and he said, no. No, God. Send somebody else. The third most common way that we experience a crisis of belief when we feel it is when we're just flat out disobedient. We see it, we know it, he's spoken to us, he's promised to be with us, he's clearly laid out the path, he's done everything in his will and his way and his power, and we just say, no, not gonna do it. It's disobedience. It's a crisis of belief where it actually comes down to the very last straw to where you just say, no. And in this circumstance, what did God do when Moses said no? He got angry. Don't get it twisted. God got angry with Moses when Moses looked at him and said, I'm not going to do it. But in this circumstance, he stuck with him. He got angry and he said, okay, but I'm still going to find a way. I'm going to send Aaron. You're going to work together. I'm going to be with you. It's going to be okay. But God in this circumstance stuck with him in his disobedience. There's a lot of other biblical circumstances where he doesn't. The story of the rich young ruler comes to Jesus in the New Testament, and he comes up to him and he says, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? I have kept all the laws and the commandments in my youth. I've done everything that the law requires that you've asked me to. What must I do to spend eternity with you? And Jesus looks at him and he says, I want you to sell everything you have and give it to the poor and then come and follow me. Now, this rich young ruler was a very wealthy man, and he had done all the right things and kept all the right rules. But what Jesus was inviting him into to actually experience God was a different fork in the road. And he said, get rid of everything you have and follow me. And the rich young ruler looked at Jesus and he hung his head. He walked away. He said, no. What did God do? He let him walk away. Said that God felt compassion on him. He was saddened that he made that decision, but he let him walk away in his disobedience. The rich young ruler saw the invitation. He saw God's will. God invited him into it. He even said, come and follow me. He gave him the invitation to get rid of the thing that was causing him to not have life, to choose anything but God. He said, get rid of that thing and follow me. And he looked him in the face, and he walked away. The third most experienced crisis of belief is when we flat out just say no. And in that circumstance, God let him. How many times do you think that God has invited you into something and you just flat out said no, and he's just let you walk? How many times can you remember where you said no, and in his grace and his mercy and his love, because he's relentless, he still chases you down. Now here's what you need to hear. God will never quit on you when it comes to your love and eternal salvation. Never. Amen. But he will let you walk away from experiencing him and his will if you choose to. The third most common one is when we just flat out say no. Sometimes he lets us. Sometimes he shoots darts across the room into your forehead, and sometimes he'll come lay on you and breathe your air. But other times he'll let you walk. Because remember, a crisis of belief is actually a decision to choose based on what you actually believe is true. That's what those circumstances are. Here's what's true about that last one. right? That even though we may be disobedient, Proverbs says there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end leads to death. He'll let us choose that. In each of these crises, as I close, the decision is made that's based out of our belief in all of those ways in which we have this crisis where we choose not God. One thing is the same, and here's what it is. I said a lack of faith, trust, or belief causes us to have a crucial turning point, a decision to not choose to trust God, to not be obedient, and to not follow him, which means we do not experience him when he invites us into it. So here's the last part, and this is going to be the transition for the next conversation next week, right? Is that we experience God when we trust and obey. And then our actual faith, when we press through these crises of belief, is that our faith leads to action. It leads to doing something about it. And all that he asks us is to have enough faith, enough hope, enough trust, just to take a first step. He just wants us to take one step. He just wants us to say, okay, I'll try. He just wants us to take the first step out of the boat like Peter did to walk on water. He didn't know how it was gonna go. There's no way it's gonna happen. God, I'm gonna sink. Just have enough faith to take the first step. Even with Moses, have enough faith that I'm gonna part this sea when you step into it. The next conversation after this crisis of belief is making an adjustment to take that step. But as we end for today, here's what my hope was. Number one is that you would recognize when you are at that Y in the road, when those crisis of belief comes up. Do you feel like you could recognize some of those situations based on what God's word got shared tonight? What's the second part? Is that when you're in that moment that you would, with God's help and the help of other people, be able to recognize this is the point right now in my life where I have not enough faith to choose to trust God. This is the reason. It's fear, it's doubt, it's confusion, it's misunderstanding, or it's just flat out disobedience. My hope for you is based on this message that you'd be able to look at it and go, that's it. And if that's as far as you get, good enough. But that's not as far as I hope you stay. Hope you're willing to look at it and go, this is one of those moments, and this is what's going on with me. And that you would heed the call of what you hear the rest of the time to do something about it. A couple questions as we land for today. Number one, are there areas in your life right now where you know that you're in a crisis of belief? You know it. What are you gonna do about it? If there's not, what areas in your life do you need to go take another look? What relationships, what circumstances where you need to go take a look and go, okay, God, you were calling, God, you were inviting, God, you're moving, but I wasn't listening. I'm not looking. What areas, what people do you need to talk to? What conversations do you need to have? What environments do you need to go back in and take another look to go, God, I want to see it? And what comes out of that? And I just said it. Who do you need to talk to? Who do you need to pray with? Who do you need to invite into your life to go, help me see what I can't see? I know, left to my own device, guys, I miss it. That's why I need my wife. That's why I need you. That's why I need my friends. That's why I need my men's group. That's why I need my life group. That's why I need community. And so the other people can go, hey, you're missing it. And I'm like, nuh-uh. I'm like, yeah, you are. Crisis of belief. Who do you need to involve in your life? Where do you need to get connected? What environments do you need to get in so that you have a chance? Where is God asking you to join him? And what step can you take?
We want to thank you for spending part of your day with us. Our mission at Real Life is to reach the world for Jesus one person at a time. If you'd like more info on the ministry or a giving opportunity, be sure to download the RLM app or visit us online at reallifeministries.com.